Happy Monday. It's Keith Tomasek, and you're listening to The Inadequate Life, a podcast about the creative process and people whose lives depend upon it. On today's show, Alex Moustakas. In 1991, Alex started a theater company in a tiny community, and now he's the artistic director of a theatrical empire. It's one of the largest employers of actors in Canada. I'm talking about Drayton Entertainment. Based in Cambridge, Ontario, Drayton runs 7 theaters. They produce a full slate of shows, often to sold-out houses. And despite all this success, Alex's father still wonders when he's going to get a real job. That's coming up on The Inadequate Life. Hey, thanks for listening. I really appreciate your company here today, tonight, whatever time it is you might be listening to this. Of course, I've got my tea going here. The tea is from Tea Leaves in Stratford, and I'm really happy to say they're a sponsor of the show. Tea Leaves is owned and operated by Karen Hartwick. I mentioned that last week. Karen's a tea sommelier, but I didn't explain what a tea sommelier is. Just like a wine sommelier, you know, a wine sommelier in a restaurant, a tea sommelier is a professionally certified person that, you know, the certification only comes after like a lot of training and study. And Karen actually travels the world meeting people who grow the tea and pick the leaves. So if you like tea as much as I do, visit www.stratfordtealeaves.com. That's the website, stratfordtealeaves.com. Or if you're in Stratford, just drop by her shop and, of course, tell her that Keith sent you. And if you're in Stratford and you're thinking of heading to her store, call in advance and you can set up a tea tasting. She does these amazing things. There's a tea and chocolate tasting or a tea and honey tasting. It'll be an experience you and your friends will never forget, I promise. Last week, I mentioned that I produced a late-night TV talk show, Open Mic with Mike Bullard. It was the most popular talk show of its kind in Canadian TV history until that point. And as a producer on that show, I get to meet some of the most talented performers from Canada, the United States, sometimes from the UK. And one of the great things was I also got to invite people on the show who I thought would be great guests. And we did that every night of the week, 5 nights a week. We would have at least 2 guests and a band. And it was a great showcase for Canadian talent. So one of the reasons I started this podcast, and people often ask me, why? What are you doing? Well, I love talking to folks. And when the show was canceled, when Open Mic was canceled, there was really nothing to replace it and no place for those people that we'd have on to go. So, I mean, Strombo does his thing on TV and Jihan's on the radio, Q on CBC. And both those shows are great and they do a good service to the Canadian performing arts community. And this podcast, The Inadequate Life, will have some of the same guests you might get on those shows. But on this show, you'll get different actors and writers and directors who, for one reason or another, aren't invited onto those shows. So it's really a platform for the performing arts in Canada. At least that's what I'm trying to do. And with your help, maybe you could share this or tell your friends. We'll turn it into something. Anyway, let's be honest. Those shows, they've got offices. They're staffed with producers, researchers, writers, teams, big budgets. I'm just a guy producing a podcast from my home with a couple of microphones here. I'm working in my suburban spare room, nothing fancy. So obviously these interviews have just a completely different vibe. They're not professional. I'm just having some fun talking to people. It's really just me and you. And speaking of you, don't forget to visit the Say Hello page on the website, StraffordFestivalReviews.com. That's the other website. The InadequateLife.com website. There's a Say Hello page there. You can send me an email, which I'll read on the show. And there's a really cool new technology. It's called SpeakPipe. And it allows you to use, to make a phone call, basically, to be without a phone call. You use the microphone you have on your computer or your laptop. So just go to the Say Hello page and leave a voice message. You can leave up to 2 minutes. And I'll play the voice messages on the show. So please say hi. Tell me what you think about the show. Tell me if you think I'm talking too much, like I am right now. Anything. And if I play your message on the show and you leave me a mailing address, a snail mail address, I'll send you an Inadequate Life sticker. Yeah, I'm very excited about that. I got stickers. Woohoo! Anyway, give it a try. Say hello. So here comes my interview with the theater impresario Alex Moustakas, recorded live at this beautiful brand new 500-seat theater he just put up in Cambridge, Ontario. So here we are at the Dunfield Theater, mm-hmm. Something that would not have existed without you.
Well, you know what? I tend to get way too much credit. I've got a lot of great people that are with me that have been part of this journey for a long time, and right from day one in the little village of Drayton, you know, and I still pay homage to a lot of those residents. You know, there's a population of less than 1,000 who really bought into this idea of professional theater in a small community out in the country, in two crossroads, difficult to get to. And it's really kind of led us to this new facility here in Cambridge.
Beautiful facility. I saw the opening of Mary Poppins with my 6-year-old son, and you had the Klieg lights out and everything.
It was
so cool, and it was just a beautiful event. The show was great. The theater was great. And you brought in, it's one of the amazing things you do, I was just reading, that you actually are one of the biggest employers of professional actors in Canada. That's
we
quite
are,
something.
Yes. That was a study done by Canadian Actors Equity Association. So, I mean, we're in big company, like the Mervishes and
sure.
the Stratford and Shaw and the National Ballet and that sort of thing. So, I mean, this year alone, I think we're employing about 150 members of Canadian Actors Equity, you know, so it's pretty impressive for a theater that started in a tiny little community in 1991, with me as the only staff member and with a legion of volunteers.
The only staff member, that's funny.
With a legion of volunteers, you know. It's interesting, I tell the story here, we've part of this project, we've installed a brand new box office system as well.
Right.
That you know, it's open 24/7 basically. You can pick your seats just like airlines, you know, and...
It's a great tool, I've been on it and I love it. Yeah,
it's great. But I've been telling the story that, you know, those first couple of years, I borrowed this chicken coop thing from a farmer outside of Drayton, and we had color-coded
boxes.
Yeah, little boxes and color-coded tickets, and you know, I would highlight the seating plan, and it was all
of
going
course.
According to plan until somebody had to return a ticket, you know, or change a date.
Yeah.
Then I'd have to have the whitener out, and start over, you know. And now it's just the technology is unbelievable.
I remember, I know what you're talking about, because I worked front of house at the Centrepoint Theater in Ottawa when it was just launching. And I remember that on the opening night, we had to actually count the, not the seats, but we had to make sure that the workers put the correct seat numbers on every seat. So no one would go, hey, there's two R22s and there's no R23.
I know.
All that front of house kind of crazy stuff you have to do. But let's go back to your personal story, because I understand that your father came from Cyprus.
Cyprus,
you were born in Cyprus,
I was
right?
born in Cyprus, yes. We moved here in 66, you know, the story, the immigrant story about
sure.
a better life for their family,
and
we didn't have a lot.
And what inspired the Musa? That was after the end of British rule, but before the coup d'etat. What inspired
your
parents' decision to leave? It's a beautiful place. I'd like to live there. I've been. I was in Larnaca and Limassol years
Limassol.
Ago.
I was born in Limassol. Yeah. I mean, you know, they've been in the news quite a bit lately, obviously, with this... the economic turn, but it is a beautiful...
Why'd your dad leave?
Well, you know what? It's the, I hate to say it, but, you know, the American dream, right?
Sure.
A better life for their children and education. And, you know, it was, I think, 11 days on the ship, brought us to Halifax and from there to Toronto. And I think my father met somebody in Toronto, a Greek Cypriot, who said there's a few Greek Cypriots in this place called Kitchener-Waterloo. So we took a train here and we kind of landed here. You know, we stayed at the Walper Hotel for 6 weeks.
And, oh my gosh.
Until they got a job. And so, you know, it's interesting, right? Because, you know, when you're having a bad day, if I'm having a bad day, I have to think back to my folks and, you know, coming to a new country, little English, you know, and starting a new life for the betterment of their kids. And I tend to think, you know, I don't have a bad day.
Yeah,
you know.
So how many kids were there?
There were three. I have an older brother and a younger sister.
Yeah. And where did this, obviously at some point there must have been a creative spark. Your parents, was there interesting music in the house or art, or how did that kick in for you? You know?
I think it's a little bit in the blood. I have my father's brother, they're both passed away now, was one of the leading actors in Greece, in Athens. His name was Sotiris Moustakas.
Your father's brother. Okay.
Yes. The first movie he ever made was Zorba the Greek
with
Anthony Quinn and Alan Bates. He was very good friends with Alan Bates for a long, long time. And he became a very, very famous Greek actor.
Huh.
In fact, when he died about 5 years ago, they held a state funeral for him, if you can believe that.
What was his name?
That's how popular he was. Sotiris.
Sotiris
Moustakas, yeah. And he made 100 films, and but, you know, in Greece, obviously.
Sure, yeah.
But he was a very I guess you could say he was their version of Bob Hope. You know, he was a comedian. And so it was, I think it was in the family
so
a little bit. And he had an interesting story because my grandfather, you know, sent him to Athens to go to business school, and he didn't quite like it.
So this would have been what period? We're talking like 50s or something?
Yeah, I would think. Okay. So he didn't like it, so he enrolled in the National Theater School in Athens, and he became an actor. So as a little bit of that in my family too, where my father really wanted us to get our education.
Well,
so
of course,
you know, I have an economics degree.
Well, I read that's the thing. So talk about school. I'm going to show you a picture, and hopefully you'll recognize what it is. And I want you to tell me what this makes you, what comes to mind when I show you that, if you know.
Was that Eastwood Collegiate?
It is Eastwood Collegiate.
That's funny. Well, you know what?
His wife been along there a little bit.
Yeah. Wow.
I gotta go over here.
A lot of memories. Yeah.
I was there.
That's, were you there?
Yeah. Check it out there. There's one of the posters. We'll put it that way, you'll be able to see it.
That's incredible.
So that's one of the posters
there
from
you
the
go.
Show. So were you in any of those shows? Though?
Oh, sure. Yeah. You know what? People, my schedule right now, I have to tell you, has been, you know, it's, you know, 7 days a week. It's 12-hour days, 14-hour days, and nothing has changed. When I was in high school, I would be at school at 7 in the morning for choir. And then I would go to class. At lunch, I would be head of student council. Right after that, after school, I would be either basketball or soccer, followed by the musical.
Right.
You know, so I'd start in a lot of the shows in high school as well. So my life really hasn't changed.
Busy.
And how busy it is, you know, it's very interesting.
In the auditoriums. And was this the auditorium that you actually
That was the auditorium, yeah. That's amazing. A lot of great stories.
And then the poster, all it was, that's Laughing, which is sort of a variety thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I played Fagin in Oliver. Yeah.
In 70.
Yeah. That's it. Yep. Exactly. That was my last show. So, yeah, it's neat. It's great.
The Gondoliers.
Yeah. I did all the Gilbert and Sullivans. And in fact, the gentleman called John Kerr, one of my mentors, started the Gilbert and Sullivan Society in Waterloo Region. And I performed with him many years, and then he kind of turned over the helm to me. Where I kind of started directing.
Right.
And that kind of gave me the start, to be honest with you. So it's been great.
So was there, going back to the auditorium, because I went to school in Montreal, and I had home room. I took drama class. This was my morning every day. I used to walk into the auditorium, which I love. Who was your drama teacher? Do you remember? Was it that person that got you going? Or?
Yeah, I mean, John Kerr from the musical side of things with the Gilbert and Sullivan Society. There was a fellow called George Joyce who was the drama teacher. And you know what? We've actually been discussing this over the past few days, how you know, the challenges that theater is facing right now.
Of course.
And part of it is that, in our opinion, that, you know, when we grew up through the school system, we were trained by, you know, people that studied
drama. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and now at times, you know, teachers are just given a curriculum to teach, you know. So, and also in economic times, you know, what's the first to suffer?
Of the arts.
The arts are, which is really unfortunate because they are the root of everything that we do.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm on an advisory committee right now for Wilfrid Laurier University and the liberal arts program and seeing, you know, trying to figure out its challenges and so on. So it's understandable. We're living in a different world now. You know, parents spend a lot of money to educate their kids, so they want to think, okay, well, what are you going to do with a geography degree opposed to something in computers
and engineering,
that sort of thing, right? But if you talk to even the high-tech industry, you know, they will hire an art student before a tech student mm-hmm. because they're thinkers.
They want creative thinkers who can problem solve and think critically about things.
Exactly. So, you know, for me personally, I've had kind of both sides of the brain.
Right.
You know, I've always said that the word show business has two parts of it, show and business.
Gotcha.
So my father was right. He wanted me to get my education, so I got my business and economics, while at the same time being involved in theater all my life.
But you were lucky because you had a positive actor role model, and your father had a, because of his brother, I assume he respected his work and was happy about it?
He totally respected his work, but it's interesting, though.
So that was a gift for you, because a lot of kids don't have that in the family, so they might want to pursue the dream. And there's no model that they can actually see it can be done.
I think my father knew, but at the same time, he kept me focused on education.
Right.
And, you know, I'll remember the president of WFLORI calling me and saying, we're going to bestow an honorary doctorate for your contribution to theater. And I called my father and I said, you're not going to believe this, but you might be able to call me Dr. Mistakis in a couple of months. And he said, that's nice, but when are you going to get a real job?
Oh my gosh.
he kept me humble. He kept me grounded, but he was right. I got my education and I've been able to use both sides of my brain.
So how did you go? Here you are in Kitchener. You graduate from Eastwood and then you study university. And then, and then how did London, England and City University kick in? Because again, it's in my world city university now, but what was the link to it then from London?
Well, I mean, for me, I finished my education and I worked for the government for a little while. I was kind of unhappy.
Going
what
crazy.
I was doing.
What was your civil servant job?
Well, I was worked for the Unemployment Insurance Commission and I also ran the student center, the Canada Employment Center for Students as well.
That could be
That was fun, you know, but you know, I obviously wasn't as happy as I wanted to be. There was still the thirst for performing and
were you
that
still
sort of thing.
Acting at that point?
I was, but within a community level.
Sure.
Do you know what I'm saying? And, you know, one night I said to, and it was a combination thing, because I was doing a show for KW Musical Productions, and the director was Alan Lund, who ran the Charlottetown Festival, you know, the famous Alan and Blanche Lund, you know. And he invited me to Charlottetown for my first professional gig to be in Anna Green Gables
Amazing.
And a brand new show he was writing called Swing. And so I, you know, that night at dinner, I looked at my dad.
There's your
and
dad
I said,
again.
I said, here's my degree. Now can I do what I want to do?
I'm going to Charlottetown to be in the show.
And he said, you know what? You have your background now and your education. I support you. You try this and see what you think, you know.
Wow.
And then, you know, so I did that as a performer for a number of years. And then I started directing a little bit.
Gotcha.
And then I, you know, I also started to realize, you know, about the business. And, you know, that's just so, there's so many good actors, just not enough work being produced, you know. So, and I thought, well, how, you know, is there an opportunity for me to kind of tie all my skills together, right? So I looked at an arts administration course, a master's program.
Sure.
And back then, it was a relatively new.
I bet that's
you know,
where you're going,
and it was being offered in New York and in London. So I chose London.
Jeez.
So I went to London, and that was
Where'd
very.
Where'd you
exciting.
Get the money for that? That must have been expensive.
You know something? I worked. I gave up my job, so I saved up. I sold my car.
That's classic.
I did. I sold my car
because you don't need it in England.
Exactly. That's right. Not in London, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
And I went to London, and you know, this as a mature student, obviously, but it was different, right? Because I didn't know anybody. I mean, in a new country away from my family and so on. But it was the first time I really realized when it's a course that you thirst to learn, it was different, completely different.
And as you said, arts management, the concept of now it seems much more common. I find, I mean, this is just anecdotally, but you see a lot of people with MBAs who can't get a regular job going into arts management, which on some level scares me because I don't necessarily know that they're invested in the arts the way you are. So you went into it as an artist, you had a soul of the artist, and you weren't going into the arts because it was a job, you actually loved it.
Exactly.
But back then it must have been such an unusual thing to do. Were there any, when you came back to Canada, were there peers? Who were your peers?
Well, here's the thing, like even there, right? And there were only 16 of us in the course. I was the only Canadian, there was one American, the rest were from Norway, China.
So cool.
You know, you name it, Australia, right? And because it was a fairly new discipline. I'll never forget, you know, most of the learning was done in the pub after lectures, you know,
right.
And you're talking to your Chinese colleague and you say, Lee, how do you market theater in China? And he said, Alex, we don't have to market. We got a billion people. You open the door, they come
they
in.
Come.
You know?
That's funny.
You know, so what we have is censorship.
Yeah,
you know?
That's a whole other
those
issue.
Kinds of things. Yeah. You know, so there's a lot of learning there. And so then when I got back here, you know, it was an endorsement really to have a course like that under my belt, you know.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
And that's where it kind of started. I was directing a show at the University of Waterloo, a Gilbert and Sullivan piece, and the general manager of the theater there happened to live in this little village called Drayton, and he knew the community came together to save this old opera house.
Right.
And he brought us together, and that's kind of where it started.
Huh.
Yeah.
With the one theater. And the other part of the story that's really important to me is that you were involved in community theater, and it just, mm-hmm. you know, small level community theater.
Yeah.
I'm assuming volunteering
community.
And here you've just built a community theater, which is going to have a huge impact on the community. I mean, I look around this community, and I've been drawn here. You're going to draw hundreds of people every night to the local businesses,
absolutely.
The local shops, the local restaurants, as well as inspiring potential other young people to pursue a job in the arts. And even if not to pursue a job in the arts, just to think creatively and think beyond the whole sort of.
That's exactly right.
The traditional way you go.
Exposure to the arts and to culture is really important about that creative side of our brain.
Yeah.
You know, our board president, his name is Brad Carr, he's currently the president of Monarch Homes in Toronto.
Yeah.
One of the huge builders, right? And to this day, he says, you know what? I'm not in my position. I'm in my position because of how much theater I did in high school.
That's amazing.
You know, it allowed me to be creative. It allowed me to communicate, to stand up in front of groups and communicate, you know. So it is really important.
That's a great example of someone who was involved in the arts and then who made the opposite choice that you made and decided
correct.
I'm going to abandon all the fun that I had and all this creative soul and the experiences with the community and go and do a more traditional sort of job. But then at a certain point in their life realizes, I have to give back.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. So, you know, it's helped his life, obviously, in his career. And now he's giving back because our board is a volunteer board commitment, right? So he's actually giving back to the arts, knowing how important it
was
is.
To him. Yeah. As an engineer.
Yeah.
The question is, would he let his kid become an actor? That's
it's like my kids right now. My daughter's in Mary Poppins, you know,
and
my son has the buzz as well. My wife's in the show, you
I
know.
Thought so.
My kids, I keep every morning
though,
I keep saying
weird.
quantum physics.
That's gotta be weird though. The whole family.
Yeah.
So how'd you meet your wife?
She worked for me back in 98. Yeah. And yeah, there you go. So it's a showbiz family.
That's
for
funny.
Sure.
And how old's the daughter?
She's 10. And
okay.
Yeah, my son just turned 8, and he's been on stage, and he'll probably be doing Peter Pan later in the season. So
yeah, well, Peter, I'm excited to see Peter Pan because the reason I went to Cyprus, I was touring. I used to do magic and comedy years ago. I was emceeing and doing magic in a show for the Armed Forces out there with Trudy Moffat.
Oh, Trudy. Yeah, Trudy's doing our
Pan. She's doing Peter Pan.
Absolutely. She's wonderful. Yeah.
So don't, she won't.
It's funny, the Cyprus thing, right? Every time when we were young and my dad would take us all back, the family back to Cyprus, I would always go to Nicosia to the Green Line.
Yeah.
And I would take the Globe and Mail and the Star and give it to the troops
that's so
there.
Cool.
You know, they were always very grateful.
We were entertaining those guys at I think it was called the Palace Hotel.
Isn't that something?
And we did the Green Line, and Trudy was part of it. And anyway, I can't wait to see her.
Wow,
it's
a small world, isn't it?
Well, and it's a small industry, you know.
Yeah,
people,
for sure.
It's sort of, there's a kinship for sure. And that's why I think this kind of podcast that I'm doing is important to inspire other people to get involved. You know, people that are listening and they, you know, people have, here's the question. I mean, the podcast is called The Inadequate Life. And part of that came from just my own realization. And see, I abandoned I studied theater and I kind of got to a point where had the family pressure that you're talking about. I've got Crohn's disease, which means my health is usually, I'm pretty good, but every now and then when I was young, it wasn't managed. So I didn't really feel that liberal and free to move around. And I was hanging out with magicians and comedians, and I'd be in their hotel room. They were from California, New York, but they were doing shows in Montreal. And I'd go back to my house, and they'd be alone in their hotel room. And I kind of, at a young age, I was young, too young to be staying out till 5 in the morning, but I realized I don't necessarily think I want to be that guy who's always on the road and never at home. It was a difficult choice. So, but then later in life, you kind of go, oh, what, you know, so that's the title came from The Inadequate Life, thinking about those kind of moments. Was there a moment in your life when you were going on this path when you had to say, when you questioned it, you're like, well, maybe my dad was right. What am I doing?
Yeah, you know, sure. Absolutely. And you know what? And I still question it. And I think that's what, I think that's been a bit of the secret of the success is because I always feel it could end tomorrow because of the nature of the business.
It is true.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So that's what kind of keeps driving me. And probably it shouldn't. You know what I'm saying? I mean, well, after 22, 23 years, you'd think that it's going to continue. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. But it just, I'm always driven because I know how difficult it is, right? I mean, the true cost of producing theater is not reflected in that average $33 ticket price. Yeah. It isn't. You know, we rely on our member contributions, our fundraising, you know, our corporate sponsorship and so on. And that's why I think a lot of people don't understand.
No,
it's,
I mean,
it's an uphill battle all the time,
sure.
You know, and then you have to meet your sales targets and your expenditures and so on, right? And then occasionally you have to defend what you do, you know, because there are people that say it's, you know, there's no need for it.
Yeah,
you know, we need roads. Yeah. We need.
So was there a moment in your path when you were almost ready to give it up or you were really seriously questioning your commitment?
Yeah. So, you know, it happens occasionally. You do question it, and it's good because then when you analyze it, and at the end of the day, for me, it's what it does for the audience and for the kids that have, you know, March break here, the place was packed with children, right? Yeah. And their young parents, that's what really interested me. You know, our demographic is much older, but to see the young parents for the first time with their kids having the first professional theater experience, right, are saying, boy, this is accessible. You know, I look around, people are in jeans and t-shirts,
I go to Stratford and I'm the old guy. I'm the young guy. I'm with my wife and our kids sometimes, and we're like, Jesus, this is bad. Like, we got to figure out how to get more young. I mean,
well, that's you're absolutely right. It's an issue right now because the older demographic is moving on, and I don't believe it's being replenished fast enough with the younger demographic. So, and there's a lot of reasons for that. There's economic reasons, there's social reasons, there's technological reasons, you know, there's educational reasons. Yeah. There's all kinds of factors right now.
But that's a good point you bring up, though, about doing a family show where you're getting in the young parents and then you're introducing them to the theater and maybe they'll see something and they maybe want to come back to
the
other
That's
other
exactly
shows.
What's happening. The other thing that we're getting and you know why it keeps me going is that we will receive emails from parents saying, my daughter has not stopped talking about this for a month.
Oh yeah.
She was always so shy. She actually stood up in front of her class and sang a song the other day. Or she was in an assembly and recited something. Do you know what I mean? And they said, we can't believe the change in her. You know, and makes it all kind of worthwhile. What we do is worthwhile. And I'm always one to say, listen, we just need a balanced life, a balanced community. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I truly believe we need our arenas and we need all that. I never want to take anything away from education or healthcare, but I really would like people to know what we do is as important in a balanced community. And not to compare apples to oranges. You know, some people think, well, if we give a little bit of money to the bricks and mortar of this theater, we're taking it away from the hospital. That's not really how it works.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm agreeing. But it's an amazing thing that you've been able to do that. So what do you do next? You've got the empire of regional. How many regional theaters?
Well,
are there
we have seven venues right now,
including the Dunfield, the one
including
right now,
the
500
one.
Seater.
Yeah. And I can tell you right now, this is no exaggeration. We're offered a theater once every 6 weeks.
Oh my gosh! Someone
from a community,
to come to the community
that has an empty space or a community that feels if they build a venue, it's going to rejuvenate the downtown core. And so, and I keep saying, listen, it's not that easy.
One thing alone,
you know,
will do it.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You know, but I guess we kind of make it look easy. It's not, but we've created a model of sustainability. We've actually created our own arts council, if you can believe that, because what we tend to do is amortize pre-production costs and administration costs over a number of venues. But it's nothing really new. I mean, it was the old Pantages circuit.
Right,
we've created our own circuit.
Yeah.
And the three Disney executives were here last week to see Mary Poppins because we're the first in the world to acquire the rights outside of them actually producing
it. I read that. So your composer was able to do their own score, your choreographer was able to play around.
Yes, that's right. We had our own choreography, our own set and so on. So they wanted to see
unique.
Because there's going to be 20 or 30 productions of it are about to happen over the next year across North America. So they wanted to see how it translates to regional theater and they came with their notepad. They wanted advice, you know, which was extraordinary because these are the guys, the worldwide licensed guys, right?
Frightening guys from New York.
Dramaturges, yeah. But they loved it. They loved the production. What they really loved was the operation. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That, you know,
the
that
behind
we,
the stuff
that we rehearse shows here and then we move them from venue to venue.
Well, that's,
you know, that's the business side.
How do you deal with that? Because some of this has got a beautiful fly system here.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
So the other theaters have that too?
We have a fly in Grand Bend, and we are, our final construction project is happening right now in St. Jacob's, the Country Playhouse.
Right.
We're putting in a fly tower right now as we speak. So three have fly towers, so they're easy to...
Right.
So now, one of the things in this whole project was that we renovated all the theaters, even though all the theaters are unique. You know, the Kings Wharf Theater in Penetanguishene is a turn-of-the-century armory converted to a theater. The Opera House in Drayton, you know, the barn in Grand Bend, you know, the winery in St. Jacobs, right? What we were able to do, even though they're unique, the box is very similar.
Right.
And it facilitates our transfers.
Do you know, so you know what I mean?
So
that's the base of your business.
The grid to floor height is exactly the same. So, so when you've got one of those great J.C. Olivier drops, scenic drops, they fit perfect.
No matter
what. You know what I mean? And the grid is spaced exactly the same. So it's trying to take more of that inefficiency out of a very inefficient business.
Right.
You know, and the fact that Mary Poppins, we've spent a lot of money on this production, right?
I bet,
it's going to be remounted this summer in Grand Bend. Well, that's money we don't have to spend again.
Sure,
so we amortize it over two venues. Because as you know, whether you're doing 10 performances or 100 performances of a show, your pre-production costs are the same.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah, yeah. So it's just a way for us to amortize and be a little bit more efficient, you
right?
know, in a very inefficient business.
Well, it really is, like you said, it is the Pantages model from back,
sure,
you know,
absolutely.
Turn of the century.
Our own kind of circuit, yeah.
Now, did that come up at City University when you were studying?
No, it didn't. You know, it came out of being in Drayton, and it was year three, I think, season three. We had something like 36,000 seats available, and because of the buzz and the work that we were doing, we sold out the entire season.
That's frustrating.
We sold out the entire season almost a month before we went into rehearsal.
See, that's like the best news and the worst news.
Exactly.
All at once.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Because you know what? We had members upset because they couldn't get tickets. And they were told, you know what? There's, right?
You got to agree with that chicken.
It's a nice problem to have. But it was at that point I thought, you know what? I wasn't really interested in creating another festival that had three or four venues in the same spot. You know, I thought, can we recreate this model somewhere else?
In a different city. Yeah.
And the way we do business, do you know what I mean? Because I really believe that each theater is indigenous to its community. I want each community to truly believe it's their theater.
Of course.
It just happens to be operated by kind of an umbrella group that's more efficient and
using they're professionals.
Business principles, right? And because I've always been about artistic integrity versus fiscal responsibility. And that I learned actually from the initial board members, in which were teachers and farmers and you know, business people in Drayton, you know, who said, listen, we're going to do this, but we're not going to spend money we don't have. We are going to raise the money and then spend it, you know, and we've kind of followed that philosophy.
Well, that's the amazing thing about one of the amazing things to me about your business model in the theaters here is you're not taking advantage of any government grants. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
How does that work?
No operating dollars.
You're making the other guys look bad.
Well, you know what? I do believe there's a place for subsidy. I really do.
Sure.
Because it helps create new work. And, you know, the Blythe Festival, for example, you know, it's all new Canadian works, right? And because I get a lot of new scripts. Unfortunately, every cover letter says the same thing. It needs work, but will you produce it?
Right.
Well, I don't have the mechanism to do that. Yeah. But there are companies that are subsidized to do that sort of thing. And to be honest with you, if I have to pay $100,000 in royalties, I'd rather give it to my neighbor than, and that's what we need to be doing. So I do believe there's a place for it. We've been able to do it without. Obviously, we've had some grants. This is the big one, right? This project.
The capital.
But already it's paying dividends. It's
amazing.
It's doing everything that we said it would do.
Sure.
You know, and it's happening. But the operation itself, and that's why cities are calling us, right? Because everyone's looking for somebody on the white horse.
They
don't have to put operating dollars into it. This was a win-win, like here for the city. You know, there were a few naysayers, you know, who said, nope, shouldn't be spending any money on this, right?
Yeah.
But it's already paying dividends. It was a, you know, $14 million project to build this theater. but it's owned by the city. We have a long-term agreement to run it for them, and no operating dollars.
Right.
They don't have to put any operating dollars because they didn't just partner with Drayton. They partnered with every other community as well.
Oh,
and that's how we're kind of sharing.
I got you.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Sure,
the fact that it's going to Grand Bend, that a work will originate in Grand Bend and then come here, the same kind of thing. So, yeah. Yeah,
it's an amazing model.
It really is. And in essence, we created our own arts council. We fund ourselves,
right?
You know, which is great. But I wish I could tell you right now it's easy. It's not. It's I've been doing this for 23 years, 7 days a week, and
I can't imagine. But you look great. We never met before, but I saw your photo and I'm trying to imagine. I'm saying that looks like an old photo. You know how people are, and I see you and you look better than you look in the photo.
Well,
I'm
there, like, you go.
No,
smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, no, you must be doing something right. Yeah, how do you take care of yourself?
Going
to the gym?
You know what? About a year and a half ago, because I have been so busy, I actually schedule it like an appointment.
Yeah.
Every morning at 6:30, I'm on a treadmill. And that's how I did it. And I watched a television, some kind of series with it. You know what I'm saying?
I got to do that.
and that and Grecian formula always works.
No, I don't believe the Grecian.
$10 for Grecian
formula. But the thing about going to the gym, that's something, I've been through periods in my life when I have had that. And usually for me, it's a partner. I'd go with someone in the morning before work. And that really made a difference. But now I'm probably in the worst shape of my life because I've just been too busy to get back on the routine. But I'm not kidding. Yeah. When I looked at you, I thought, this is a healthy looking guy.
Yeah.
And I know the kind of stress you're under because I've followed the company and I've seen the development.
And that's exactly why I started doing it. I was just really starting to feel the stress. And the thing is, the last few years have been all about construction. And we're so glad it's coming
over.
To an end, and especially for this place, because we can now just get back to our core business, which is just producing theater.
And
you know what I mean?
I guess it's a nice reason to have. I mean, one of the big themes in people whose lives depend upon the creative process and often having to be away from their families is the struggle that it places on their family if they're away on the road doing a show. So,
yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's
it's been tough because, we have two children now, my wife Jackie and I, and Hadley and Lucas. One's 10 and one just turned 8. That's been the biggest challenge. I mean, it's a good challenge because trying to balance lives, you know what I mean? And know you influence young lives. So, they're part of the business now.
They're on stage.
It's just, it's amazing. But I have to, on a personal level, that's been the biggest,
I bet.
The biggest challenge is balancing family.
But how many kids get to go see their dad at work though? That's the other thing.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. But you know what's interesting? My kids are the only ones ever that I say I'm going to work. I personally never say I'm going to work. I'm going to the theater. Yeah. I have rehearsal. I have a show.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I never say I'm going to work except the kids because they know how busy I am.
It's your job.
I want them to know it's a job, you know. But it's funny. My son, I asked him some time ago. I said, well, what do you want to do when you grow up? He said, I want to do what you do, Daddy. Just point.
That's beautiful.
Just point. You go, well, directing is more than just pointing, son.
You gotta study. You gotta go read some Malcolm Gladwell. Do your 10,000 hours. And
what
then
comes out of the mouths of babes, right? The best one ever with him. Boy, he must have been like 4 years old or something. I said, Lucas, what do you want to do when you grow up? I said, what do you want to be? And he looked at me and he said, a doctor or a butterfly.
Ooh.
And I said, well, it's wide open, buddy.
That's pretty fascinating.
Isn't that great?
I took Cole to see Peter Pan at Stratford. I guess it was 2 years ago. So he was 4, and we got part of my background is magic, and part of that came from being involved in theater. So I wanted him to experience the magic of Peter Pan and the floating and everything. So we had pretty good seats, 4th or 5th row. We got lucky with those, and it was late. We didn't know if he was going to stay awake. First time staying. So he sees the show, and the first thing I notice is I can see the wires on, and I'm like, oh no, there's no magic. But I didn't say anything to Cole because I want him to experience it.
Yeah.
He never said anything. And then literally 2 weeks later, we're in the backyard one day, and we're talking about something else, baseball or gardening. And he just comes out and he goes, you know, Daddy, I could see the wires on Peter Pan. I'm like, where did that come from? It just popped out of
nowhere. Isn't that something?
Out of nowhere.
Yeah, well, you know what? The occasional person here says to me, I could see the wires.
Yeah.
And I respond by saying, you know, people can't fly.
Yeah, exactly.
Just saying.
It's fun though. It's fun. It's fun. When you're a kid, it's fun to have. I think that's part of the role of theater is to make
to believe
that the impossible.
Right. Absolutely.
Is
that.
And that's the other totally thing is the fear factor. We were talking about Beauty and the Beast before we started on the mic, and I took my my niece and nephew to see Beauty and the Beast in Toronto when it first came to Toronto, and I remember saying afterwards to Melissa, who was Belle, I said, I didn't think it was scary enough. You know, it was the beast wasn't frightening. So the kids never had that moment, which, you know, all the old fables and Bettelheim children's literature goes back to there is a moment of legitimate fear and concern. And then there's the tension and then the release.
That happens a little bit in Mary Poppins, the when the toys come to life.
You're right,
Playing the game.
It's a bit dark.
Yeah. It's a bit dark. Yeah. Some little kids will cry and leave the theater. But you need to do it, right?
I believe you have to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's good. Then there's the payoff.
And the original story, actually, of Mary Poppins is much darker. Like the original books are darker. Yeah. And when they produced it in London for the first time, didn't quite work as well as it did in New York because it was way darker.
So
I think they adjusted it a little bit to make it a little bit more accessible.
And
you
that's what Disney does.
That's what they do exactly.
That's what they do.
So
do you get, do you miss being on stage? Because you were an actor and you worked
with you know what? I was on stage last year for the first time in 12 years. I did the musical 9 to 5. I played that sexist, egotistical, lying, hypocritical bigot of a boss.
Everybody in the office must have loved
that. Just another
day
at the office, No, it was good because I got shot and put in a harness and thrown into boxes and everything.
The staff must have loved
that. It was good. You know what? It was good for me just to remind myself what actors go through, what the technicians go through, what the theater goes through and the audience, you know. It was good. I mean, we get to the point where I go, who came up with this schedule?
Four
shows in 2 days, and everybody would be pointing at me, and I went, "Oh, okay."
That's the part of the pointing your son doesn't get to see.
Exactly, that's right.
Now, so you mentioned Alan Lund earlier in the conversation. Yeah. Now, you guys do a scholarship. You raise money to help students.
Yeah, last
in,
20
in his
years
name.
Since he passed away. We've given out thousands of dollars worth of scholarships, and everybody, including the theater and technician, everybody volunteers their time for a night, and we put a little show together, and all the proceeds go towards scholarships.
Scholarship for specifically someone who's interested in the arts.
Yeah, anybody who wants to further their career in the arts, you know.
And Alan took you, he was sort of a mentor to you, as you mentioned, he took you to Charlottetown.
Yeah, he did, And then, in fact, I was in Charlottetown the last 2 years he was, and I brought him on board to direct the first show in Drayton. Everybody thought it was odd, this me as the artistic director didn't direct the first show, but I brought him in, and I think it was good. And I was in the show, but I brought him in, and it just it set the tone, I think, in this little village, as I said, two crossroads, incredible performances. And
that's how Stratford started. It was a little village, and they brought in people from away, and they, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
We met Alan, he was at
KW Musical Productions, he was directing a show, and I worked for him, and then he kind of spotted me and took me up to Charlottetown, and I did the 1986 national tour of Anne of Green Gables as well. So it was a great learning experience.
And then you were able.
And I learned so much from him. And I would actually go to rehearsals when I wasn't called just to watch him work
as a director,
and a choreographer. Yeah, it's just amazing how he would just close his eyes before setting a scene, and then he'd have 20 dancers crisscrossing. It was like math, you know, and he used 50 years of his experience in setting numbers. So it was quite something to see.
That's a good point you bring up about the math, you know, the sort of the skill set when people think about going into the arts, they maybe don't anticipate that math is actually going to be important.
Absolutely. And dance, geometry, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's figures and so it was very interesting.
And it's a great thing that you are able to pay tribute back to him through the foundation. Are there any actors that have come through the Drayton system that you're really proud of that have gone on and that have actually left? They've been so successful.
I mean, the interesting thing is, I think we talked about it earlier, it's a big country, big continent, but a small industry. Right. So one day, you know, Louise Petrie is starring in Blood Brothers on the Drayton stage. The next day she's nominated for a Tony Award for Mamma Mia on Broadway. Michael Terrio, he's probably one of the busiest actors in Canada right now. You know, I gave him his Equity card for a production called She Loves Me. So we've had a lot of amazing performers come through our stages. You know, I mean, this Mary Poppins right here, Mark Ledbetter is playing Bert, actually performed it on Broadway. You know, we've had you know, if you look at their resumes, they've performed on Broadway and London's West End, on international tours, you know, and actors are, you know, an interesting breed. They'll go where the work is.
For sure.
And in most cases, they love working with us.
Yeah.
Because it just reminds them why they got in the business.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, it's about the connection with the audience.
Okay, and it's a community thing, as opposed to Broadway, which is really, you know, 80% tourists or
totally.
Something. So you're kind of, it's That's a whole different vibe when you come to a place.
You know something,
like
on
this.
Opening nights for us, because we've built such a strong family of audiences, they sit at the edge of their seat saying, okay, what are you going to show me this time? And you can feel it. Like you can sense it in the theater, right? That there's an ownership.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I'm most proud of. The fact that we've introduced theater to people that have never experienced it before. You know, I remember those first year in Drayton, the men showing up going, I don't know why I'm here.
The wife's
dragging me to this place, you know, and now they're the ones that stop me and say, you know what, you know, we're seeing 10 shows this year and 20 of our friends are coming with us and they're making suggestions for programming. I love it. So it's been great that way. You know, they've taken ownership and you can hear them in the lobby saying, you know, this is our theater. We've been here from day one and we've helped it grow. And that's exactly what we want.
And as you said, talking about the actors, it transpires. It's a whole different experience than performing in a touring company or performing on Broadway. A whole different kind of a vibe because you're connected to the audience.
Yeah.
How are you going to top Mary Poppins next year?
Well, it's funny you should say that, but as I said, the Disney executives came to see it and loved it, loved our operation, and we're already talking about another Canadian premiere of something that they're working on right now. So
very cool.
So I mean, it's great to make those connections. We've had a great connection with Columbia Artists out of New York because we've done some major North American tours now. We did a tour of Cats. Dirty Rotten Scoundrels did a 26-week U.S. national tour.
Yeah.
We took Camelot out. They took. We were the first to get Tap Dogs
as
our own
that.
Production.
You were at Just for Laughs with that,
that
you?
Went out as well, and looks like they may be taking Godspell out this fall as well. So, you know, they've recognized the caliber of productions we do, and more importantly, is the caliber of artists that we have.
You know.
And
here's the question: So, when do you get? So, you produce the young folks that come in, and you give opportunities to young folks to work with. So now, there's probably actors in the community here, small parts that are on stage with a guy like Ledbetter, who's from Broadway. So when does it come around that the older one's actually someone who goes away? I guess that's an example, but he's an American. Are there any Canadians? Do you see a day when a Louise might come back?
Oh, totally. Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I was talking to Louise last year, and we almost, she almost came to do something. And,
wow.
And I know there's a few shows that she said I would do them in a minute.
If you do that show and the timing is right, I'm free.
Absolutely. Because, again, they're... Cynthia Dale did Sweet Charity for us, right? She played Charity in Sweet Charity.
Yeah.
And she said, just let me know if it's a good part in Cambridge. I'll be there.
Interesting. You know? Well, I don't know if you saw 42nd Street last year, but it was amazing,
though.
It was so good to see her back on the
stage. Yeah, exactly.
Very
and then if you know, look at that cast and look at the bios. Yeah. And every one of those people had worked for me, maybe two. Do you know what I mean?
That's great.
And worked for Drayton. So we, you know, there's Stratford. You know, I have a great deal of respect for Stratford, you know, and their history. My gosh, you know, starting in a tent and what happens, you know, 60 years later. We all share the same actors.
Sure.
We all share the same creative, you know, same lighting designers, set designers, and so on, right? So
it's just a whole different, again, and they're more similar to the tourist experience where, you know, a large body of their people come to see shows. They're from away. It doesn't have that relationship with the community.
Yeah. And they do what they do. We do what we do. And I totally believe the more theater we have, the better.
For
as long as everyone's doing some great theater.
And
introducing theater, you know, like we've introduced theater to a lot of people that have never seen it before are now stopping me saying, you know, we're going to Stratford next week.
Right.
We're
going to
see some Shakespeare. Good for you. You know, that's great. I mean, that's what it's about.
That's interesting. As long as they come back to Drayton. But so what's your advice to the medium size theater in a medium sized city, you know, 500, 300, 400,000 people, something like that, that's struggling? And they are, a lot of them are struggling.
Yeah.
And a lot of them rely on arts funding and that sort of stuff. How do you, what do you say to those kind of organizations?
Well, you know what? I think the advice that I would give is exactly how we've operated our place, and that's to build relationships. We build relationships with our audience, with our corporate partners, our members.
Yeah.
And as a result of building strong relationships, we build business transactions. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they become loyal and so on. And also find what the niche is, you know, like make sure you're producing something that people want to see.
Want to see, yeah.
You know, and there's a place for all of it. Yeah. There really is.
Well, and that's the difficult.
The programming they're doing at the Tarragon Theater in downtown Toronto is not something you would do Drayton.
Of course.
And because if I did it in Drayton, you know, we just don't have the audience base. We don't have the background and so on.
And henceforth, the funding available, like we talked about earlier, for them to be an incubator, to create things,
absolutely,
to try and have an opportunity to fail. You don't have absolutely that kind of room to fail, really.
Right, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
What's time you came the closest in terms of a show and you're like, oh my God, no one's buying tickets to the show?
Yeah, well, you know, we've had a few of those. Like, I mean, remember, we've done, you know, 23 years of shows. It's a lot of shows. So it's a pretty good track record. But we've done a few things that you go, wow, why is anybody coming to see this?
Yeah. You know, can you think of one?
It just didn't meet the demographic. Well, yeah, there was a great show we did about 3 or 4 years ago called The Spelling Bee, 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee.
Yeah.
I thought it was one of the best shows of the season. Just did not connect with the audience.
Wow.
Maybe because of the music. I don't know what it was. And it just flopped at the box office. And I thought it was probably the best show we did all year, you know? So sometimes you can't second guess it. And that's what keeps you going too, right? Yeah. No, we've had the odd thing that you go, really? You don't like this?
Throw another one at me. I'm serious. I'm curious. What's another one that you kind of thought would work?
Oh, my goodness.
This is how we
learn. Think about it. Yeah, yeah. I'd have to think about it. But there's been a few. Mum's the Word was a show that didn't work for us. Again, it was, you know, when I read it, it was great. Yeah. You know, it just didn't connect, you know, just some things like that. But it's a great show.
Sure.
So you know, like Spelling Bee, fantastic show. So why at that moment of time did it not connect?
And what's been your biggest surprise hit where you thought you were taking a risk and then I was like, no, why did I even second guess myself?
Yeah,
any of those kind of situations?
Well, I mean, one of the biggest successes we've had are some shows that I've actually put together. They're the kind of legend series, the Twist and Shout.
Yeah.
We did the British Invasion, the Rock and Roll Legends, Country Legends. You know, those have really connected. I couldn't believe it. Just could not believe the response.
And which was the first
one? And they've outsold. The British Invasion one, the Twist and Shout, has outsold any big name show you can think of. You know, Mary Poppins, you name it. Any of those shows.
What was the first one of those you did, you put up?
It was called Twist and Shout, British Invasion.
And
that was
the first one
that
in that
genre? That was the
first
one that we did, yeah.
And when you were doing it, how was that? How did that feel in terms of, because you're trying something you've never done before.
You're right.
It's not like a Broadway show. It's not like we can say the reviews are great.
Yeah.
How do you sell it?
You sneak it
in the subscription series, hopefully.
We put it in and we knew I actually knew the first rehearsal. I got on the phone by the end of the first day and I called friends and I said, tell everybody. And I knew that day we're going to have a huge hit. And once it opened, it just skyrocketed. I've never seen anything like it. We were selling Grand Bend. We were selling 600 tickets a day, like a house a day. And that was just on word of mouth.
Speaks to the power of if we can make that connection.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you direct it or you created it?
I directed it. Yeah, I directed it and collaborated with Bob Foster, who's a big music director in Toronto. And it was one of those things where we had the right people and the right creative team and it just kind of went from there.
That must have been a thrill, not knowing.
It was a huge thrill,
when you had when you were building it, that it was going to connect that way.
Yeah, so it taught me a big lesson for sure.
Which is what?
Well, that if it's the right material, you know, and it meets the needs of the community, and it was the '60s, right? So
that's our audience.
It's our audience, right? It was a lot of nostalgia,
sure,
right? And some people will say, well, it's not a. Not theater, it's a concert. Well, is it storytelling? I think it's storytelling. I think it's storytelling in the nostalgia, the period of the piece, the costumes,
sure,
the music tells a story, all of it.
Evocative nature. And it brings us back to a period in our lives when, obviously it was a very, we were full of hope and piss and vinegar.
That's exactly right. That totally. Yeah.
I can't wait to see what your next exciting original. Is there something, are you working on something originally?
We are, the same team. We're doing a show called Legends of Harmony this summer in our schoolhouse theater in our smallest venue.
So that's
all
the
about
process.
3, 4, and 5 part harmony singers.
Billy Joel kind of flirted with that.
Yeah.
What was that album of his? He had the song. It was a big hit. I haven't been there since the longest time. He had a whole album. It was a throwback
is that right?
To that.
Yeah.
So we're working on that right now. The smallest theater workshop.
We're just going to try it there. And then if it's the pre-sales on it are already amazing just because of the other shows, right, you know, it's by the same team that created this show and this show, right? Yeah. And we're hoping that if it takes off, then we'll, what we'll do is produce it in two other theaters next year.
The following year, right. That's exactly perfect. Great. Yeah. It's a great system. Yeah. You have your, it's exactly inside of Pantages model. It's an amazingly clever thing to do.
Yeah, exactly. Even new works here, right? If we do a new work, we can actually kind of workshop it for 4 or 5 years.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like you can keep developing it every time you produce it.
Of course.
In other venues.
In front of a crowd.
Yeah, exactly.
What a thrill.
So, yeah.
Well, Alex, thanks so much for taking the time to do this. I really appreciate
pleasure.
It.
Yeah, it's hopefully great. Nice conversation.
Well, hopefully we've inspired some other people to get involved and not be afraid of the business side of things.
Well, like, you know, Mary Poppins says, anything can happen if you really believe. And it's, you know, I know it's cliche, but you involve the right people who have the same kind of passion. But I have to tell you, I get way too much credit. You know I started this and I still work very hard, but I've surrounded myself with the right people who have the same kind of passion as I do, you know, because it's a tough business. It's a real tough business. I don't know any other business that can do what we do with the resources that we have. Do you know
you're
what I'm
right.
saying?
You're right.
So,
yeah. And always on time. The show starts at 8 o'clock, no matter what happens.
You know what? That's something people don't understand. You can't delay your product.
Yeah.
Right? It was like, you know, building this theater. I said, no, you have to understand. My first performance is this day.
I've sold 500 tickets.
I'm not Sears.
They're coming.
I'm not Sears. I'm not going to call the client and say, hey, you know that fridge that you ordered? It's going to be, you have to wait 2 weeks for it. No.
Yeah.
I've already sold tickets. I have contracts with actors, you know.
Oh, for sure.
So it's, it's a different business, you know.
Well, it must have been a crazy time in your life. As you said, you're probably happy that it's behind you, but now it's a whole new chapter.
Yeah,
so
totally.
We look forward to seeing the new shows.
Great.
And what's the name of the small theater?
The schoolhouse. St. Jacob Schoolhouse theaters. Yeah, yeah. So, right. It's good. It's good.
Well, thanks very much again.
Thank you.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Well, there you go. Alex Moustakas, thank you so much. He was so very generous sharing his stories of his personal life and the challenges he faced on his path to success. And one of the reasons I started this podcast is to remind everybody, and you know, myself included, that we all go through ups and downs in pursuit of our creative inspiration and our interest in the arts. And one of the actors in one of Alex's show, he mentioned Big Band Legends, is a young guy named Michael Van Hevel. He's in the songs of Sinatra as well as Big Band Legends, two great shows. And Michael has got a really cool story, and we write about it on StratfordFestivalReviews.com, my other website. There's a video there and a little bit of a story about how Michael was discovered on YouTube. Really cool story about how YouTube is changing the whole audition process, and guys like Michael got their break because of YouTube and people like Alex who are creative and go, oh, let's take a look at YouTube for some actors. Before I go, I always like to tell you, it's so important to remember that no one makes it on their own. And part of the creative process is taking risks. And that inevitably leads to failure, right? We've all been there. So do what you can. Surround yourself with good people. Pick yourself up when you fail. And most importantly, do good work yourself. Come back every Monday for another episode of The Inadequate Life.